This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
You know, they would sell it to the community that there's going to be all these jobs and jobs. But a lot of times it was all these people coming in and they would set up places called, they were called man camps with trailers, and people would come in from Texas, Oklahoma, all over. So it wasn't really producing jobs for West Virginia.
The telecom titan Verizon just recently laid off around 15,000 employees. And it was just a blip on an otherwise slow news day. The DIY craft giant Michaels regularly hires 15,000 seasonal workers for the holidays, and it doesn't generally even brush up against a headline. We provide these numbers to help our listeners scale the 14,000 people working in West Virginia's coal industry, and the massive influence the question of their employment has on the American political and environmental landscape. This week on Sea Change Radio, we speak with Babette Hogan and Julie Eisenberg, whose new film, Running for the Mountains, takes a close look at the West Virginia coal mining industry. We discuss the environmental waste caused by coal in the state, dive into West Virginia's politics, and hear what they learned over their 15-year filmmaking process. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Julie Eisenberg and Babette Hogan. They're the co-filmmakers of the new film Running for the Mountains. Babette, Julie, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you so much for having us join you.
Thanks, Alex.
So either one of you can take this. Why don't you first give us a snapshot of the mission of the movie, what you were trying to accomplish with it, and then give us a quick executive summary as well.
Basically, we're telling the story of how the political structure reinforces our addiction to fossil fuels and limits the ability for us to move forward with the green agenda, as seen in West Virginia, because it became clear that it held all the components that we wanted to look at.
At Sea Change Radio, we've covered a decent amount of coal mountaintop removal issues, coal in general, natural gas, but one of the things that really drew me into your film was that you really combined the politics into the narrative and delved into the crafting of policy that's creating the mess that is modern day West Virginia.
Well, we started the film back around 2008. So it was on and off filming over the course of about 15 years. We, finished updating a little bit around 2023, 2024. So really, we brought it from back in 2008 up to almost the current day. We hadn't had the last election when we wrapped. But we appreciate that you did recognize how we were trying to tie together political forces along with the environmental destruction, because we wanted to show the connection between the people, the politicians who are working hand in hand with industry and working consistently to deregulate so that more and more destruction could happen in a gold rush fashion, faster and faster, without communities stepping in to stop it or governmental agencies stepping in to stop it.
And West Virginia was really rather unique because while it had traditionally been a Democratic state for many, many, many years, those Democratic policies, those politicians were still practicing a very self-serving style of politics from day one. And it was helpful to Julie and I, who have actually kind of somewhat different political views about the party system, because a third party was evolved in West Virginia that really spoke to the environment, whereas the Democrats and Republicans had ignored it or were part of the ethos of extraction is what we do. It is what we are. It is how we identify ourselves. So at one point in the film, Joe Manchin says, you know, we're an extraction state.
Yes. And the person who he was speaking with corrected him and said, no, we're the mountain state.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And so there are people there who, for whom it is their home. It is their, it is where they exist. It's where their families are. And so for them, it's just not an extraction state. It is their home. We focused on a third party that evolved to try to fight and protect the environment, starting with coal, starting with mountaintop removal. But what we saw in the course of being there over and over again was that it's not just about coal. It's not just about fracking. It's about the use of water. It's about the abuse and ownership of water and how that affects communities. So, and that's something that's going to be on all of our plates here very soon, if not already.
The traditional party system seems quite broken in West Virginia, as evidenced by Jim Justice not being able to get the Republican nomination for governor. And then he goes to the Democrats, and then he switches back to the Republicans once he's elected. I mean, and he's one of, if not the richest man in the state, completely all on the backs of coal mining. And then Joe Manchin is this Faustian bargain for liberals over the last decade plus. You saw Bill Clinton endorsing him. And you could make the case that having a Joe Manchin in the Senate allows for more progressive Supreme Court judges passing, but he's shown his true stripes the second he stepped out of office. We knew who he was all along, but he had that blue check mark by his name, so Democrats got in line. Can you give us a brief history of the Democratic Party versus Republican Party? And is it similar to the Deep South where you had the Dixiecrats?
So Senator Byrd, early on in his career, he was a racist, or at least he held racist views. He evolved out of that.
Just for our listeners, Senator Robert Byrd, who's a longtime Democratic senator.
Correct. I mean, and because there were only Democrats that got elected in West Virginia, again, until we saw the influence of Joe Manchin in elections. Julie may want to say something.
Yeah, I'm not going to go back to the, you know, beginning of the 20th century, but for years and years, the state legislature was Democrats as a huge majority in West Virginia. I believe that started around the 1960s with the election of John F. Kennedy. And then they were very strongly Democrat because I think of the election of Kennedy, and then with Robert Kennedy, senior, not junior, coming in and doing a lot of work around poverty in Appalachia. So I think there was that feeling. It started to shift in the 15 years that we were there, from a point where before you couldn't really get elected unless you were a Democrat, till now you couldn't get elected if you were a Democrat, mm-hmm. just because Trump coming in, a lot of, how do I articulate this? A lot of the people we spoke to would say, we're not really tied to any party, or we're not really Democratic anymore, because we felt like the parties are the same and the Democratic Party isn't helping us. So there was a shift in the years that we were there in the early 2000s, we saw to more independent voters or to the Republican Party. With Trumpism coming in, there was a huge shift.
And I mentioned earlier, just in passing, the Halliburton loophole. Why don't you explain what that is?
The Halliburton loophole, as it relates to fracking, which is how we were looking at it and using it in the film, when you do the practice of fracking, fracking is injecting water at pressure down through layers of rock, and then the natural gas is expelled out, and then they, you know, burn it off, purify it. So with the Halliburton loophole, they, in this frack fluid, it was a secret concoction and people weren't allowed to know what it is. The Halliburton loophole was a law that was made when Dick Cheney was the vice president. He had been a CEO of Halliburton, And so Halliburton produced the fluid used in fracking to crack through the rock, the secret combination. And they wanted to keep it a secret and not tell people what was in it, despite if there, so people didn't know if there would be health impacts or impacts on the water. And so when Dick Cheney was vice president, he helped engineer this loophole that the formula would remain secret for frac fluid. And so people just don't know what's in it and how it pollutes the water. When it's used with water, a ton of water, to expel the natural gas and frac, people don't know what the water's mixed with, or if people encounter that frac fluid, how dangerous it could be to them.
And we have the frac fluid here, of course, in California too. We do hydrofracking, not as much, but we do it. We also have unsealed wells, which is a problem. But we don't have quite the level of deregulation that exists in West Virginia, or anti-regulation. So, and in West Virginia, it's part of the Marcellus Shale, which is a particular type of structure of rock that will, when it is drilled into, it exposes radon. So the water is becoming radioactive, it's being recirculated, reconcentrated. And so when it's finally expelled, it is even more toxic.
This week's episode is dedicated to the memory of Jimmy Cliff. This is Alex Wise on SeaChange Radio, and I'm speaking to Babette Hogan and Julie Eisenberg. Their new film is Running for the Mountains. People can check it out on runningforthemountains.com. So, Julie, Babette, we were talking about water being polluted by the coal and natural gas industry. There's one very poignant scene in your movie where a Republican staffer of former Congressman David McKinley is speaking to one of your subjects. They're going around to different representatives' offices and passing out these peer-reviewed studies of the impacts of coal. When these politicians are asked about these peer-reviewed studies, they usually say, well, I'm not familiar with that. So the mission that Paul and Jesse had was to say, well, now you can't say you don't know about this because I'm giving you this information. I'll print it out. And this staffer starts getting into it where he's saying, well, one third of the water might be affected by coal, but 100% of West Virginians need electricity. You got to choose one or the other. You can't have both electricity and clean water. It seems insanely callous to me.
Both of them, almost all our characters had been to all these different community meetings or meet your representative. And, you know, they would go and be very persistent in terms of bringing up either the health impacts or environmental impacts. And a lot of times there was so much feigned ignorance on the part of the representative, like, really, I never heard of that, or I didn't know that. And Paul had showed up at, I think, a coal forum and tried to talk about, have you looked at these, you know, 20 or so peer-reviewed studies of the health impacts? And, you know, the major representatives there said, oh, I have no idea. No, I haven't seen them. So he made it his mission, and Jesse joined him in that endeavor to go from West Virginia to Washington, D.C. with these printed studies all together and hand them out one by one to their representatives, including David McKinley.
And it might seem like they were wasting their time in a lot of ways, because you know you're talking to people who don't agree with you. And it's almost more poignant when the staffer comes in, you catch him on film throwing this stuff away as he walks out. Because you're capturing it on film, it's a real gotcha moment, I think.
So one of the things that Paul and Jesse were doing as they went and handed off the studies was they had a piece of paper that they wanted signed that acknowledged that they received the studies. So then next time, Shelley Moore Capito, who was in Congress then, or Joe Manchin or Rockefeller or David McKinley, couldn't feign ignorance. It would be like, no, your staff received this. So he signed the form, the staffer, and he was the head of the office and staff. He wasn't just some little summer intern or something. No disrespect to the great summer interns.
You know, there's a few points at which we began to take what we were seeing much more seriously. In truth, Julia and I had expected to do kind of a fun movie, but we were dragged continuously into this darker and darker side of politics. Our movie is almost quaint today in comparison to what we see going on with Trump's administration. But it is still useful because it does happen. It starts locally, bubbles up. We found that what Manchin and the tactics that were used in West Virginia were being exported at a national level. Trump, of all people, really took it to the extreme. But that's what we were seeing in West Virginia as just regular course.
And we know that the Green Revolution creates hundreds of thousands of jobs, potentially millions. And yet the canard of coal jobs getting sucked away by the tree huggers still remains. And you see it on film, these people who are like pro-coal advocates who are like, you took 400 jobs from us last time you marched. What's going to happen this time? One thing you don't address in the film, but we have talked about this with other guests on Sea Change Radio, is the relatively scant amount of jobs that coal actually produces in not only West Virginia, but nationwide.
Well, and less so now.
With mountaintop removal, a lot of the communities whose mountains were sacrificed, those weren't being, quote, mined, blown up and then mined by locals. There were other people coming in, and even more so in fracking. You know, they would sell it to the community that there's going to be all these jobs and jobs. But a lot of times it was all these people coming in, and they would set up places called man camps with trailers, and people would come in from Texas, Oklahoma, all over. So it wasn't really producing jobs for West Virginia. The next part of that equation is so much of this was sold as energy for our national security. And then with these pipelines, a lot of this coal and natural gas is being exported. So it's kind of,
it's a ruse.
Circling back to the amount of jobs, I mean, I think it's, if one were to watch a presidential debate, or let's say a Senate debate for West Virginia Senate seat, I think one would think that there's probably 200,000-300,000 coal jobs in the state, but there's 14,000. I mean, this is like one company, basically, and it has such an outsized impact on the way we all consume our air and water and live our lives for these 14,000 jobs.
Well, with the Trump administration, I was just reading that I read Food and Water Watch had cited that there's a proposal for over $600 million, this proposal to prop up coal and to try to, you know, upgrade these coal processing plants to try to keep it in the energy mix, when, you know, dedicating money to doing that for energy is not the most efficient thing.
While taking money away from green energy projects. I mean, obviously it's absurd.
This is Alex Wise on SeaChange Radio, and I'm speaking to Babette Hogan and Julie Eisenberg. Their new film is Running for the Mountains. People can check it out on runningforthemountains.com. You obviously are limited in time in the film, but I couldn't help but wonder if you had more time, let's say an 8-part Ken Burnsian documentary for 20 hours, how you would incorporate the education issue in West Virginia, because there seems to be a great deal of ignorance with issues like coal jobs and the opioid epidemic.
Yes. West Virginia was early targeted by pharmaceutical industry, primarily because there's a lot of pain due to the backbreaking work of coal. It's very laborious and puts them into, for those who still do go under the mines, it was, and there's black lung, which is a very, very painful, painful disease. So you found a really ready community who were convinced by their doctors that this is going to be fine. Just keep taking this. And in fact, one of our participants in the movie, Mike Manypenny, had himself terrible back pains and was on opioids for a while. And then when he recognized that they had to keep increasing his prescription, that in fact, oh my gosh, I'm getting addicted. And he just cut himself off cold turkey. So we saw this actually in many cities in the 70s with the infusion of cocaine and other drugs that just deteriorated communities. And I'm sure there's some people who can speak much better to that subject than we can. But yes, they were targeted for that kind of exploitation.
I want to circle back to the, what you were saying, there's so many other films and pieces of films that we could make. And indeed, I think Babette definitely wanted to do that. And we certainly have enough material for at least, you know, a couple other long films and many little short pieces. And we have done some and talk about different ones that we can do. I mean, there's pieces about the history.
The Blair Mountain revolt you chronicle quite well in the film.
And we recorded a lot. I mean, that was the dilemma, is that we had to keep shaving down. You know, it could have been a 2 or 3 hour of a film to, 75 minutes or so.
There are two strong veins that we couldn't do that really address where we are nationally today too. And one was religion plays a strong controlling effect on the communities there. Very evangelical. People are brought up in that philosophy, and they're told what to respect. They're told, you know, the preachers tell them who to vote for, basically. And then there's also the courts, which the judges are voted on, and you only have about 30% of the population voting. So there's that too. The turnout's not good.
And with Citizens United, the wealthiest get elected.
Right.
Or the most corrupt, who are propped up by the wealthy.
In fact, we saw steering away, as Manchin was going into his run for the Senate, we saw him steering money away from like the grassroots and making sure that he got all the money from the Democratic Party there. And what we heard from people that we would consider those who are fighting for the environment, fighting for communities, was like, I am not getting any help from our local Democratic Party. They are not coming to us. We're not getting any money. It's all going to Manchin.
Indeed, when Jim, you had mentioned before, Jim Justice, who is now the senator who took Manchin's seat, and he's a Republican. As that evolved, there was an open gubernatorial seat, and Jim Justice had lost the primary on the Republican side. So it was indeed Joe Manchin who said, you should run as a Democrat. And that was a way of squashing more progressive voices from West Virginia, or even more moderate voices. He had this rich Republican become a Democrat. He took the seat, and within a year, he had flipped back to Republican. And, with Trump and his arms around each other, their fellow billionaires. And now Jim Justice is now in that Senate seat.
So usually a film that highlights the work of these important grassroots voices, these brave people, including the filmmakers who were getting arrested and butting heads with the deep-pocketed system in West Virginia, would be an inspiring story. But this was made pre-Trump, Trump's re-election at least. And so I felt almost more depressed watching it, not because of anything that the film did, but it just reminded me of where we are and the morass. And I felt so sorry for the people in this state. But maybe you can kind of leave us with some silver lining, some inspiring takeaways.
West Virginia is still beautiful and it's still worth protecting. And the people there are beautiful and the best examples of America, if given a chance. And they just haven't been given that chance. They've been stuffed into this tunnel. And it's, you know, I don't want to speak for them. We have one of our friends with us who would speak for himself and his people.
We're all Americans, though.
Yes, exactly. But like, it's still worth fighting for. And there are people there who are fighting. And they're people like you and me. And it's not, they're not strangers. They're not a bunch of gunslinging, MAGA-minded humans who don't deserve our attention. In fact, they do deserve our attention because they were neglected for so long and put into this situation.
Do you want to add anything to that, Julie?
Well, I think a lot of people in this new Trump 2.0 are discovering their own forms of activism, especially on a local level. And I think it's been very empowering for a lot of people. So I think there's hope. I think it's always great to be informed and to not give up and say, this is hopeless, it won't happen. You know, we have a lot more resources in terms of our being able to reach out and communicate than a lot of the people that we saw in West Virginia did. There was a lot more isolation and a lot of people didn't have, you know, whatever, broadband, Wi-Fi. I think there are still opportunities to really make a difference. And I'd urge people to do so because this earth is what we've got. This water is what we've got. So if we can do it, you can do it. That's all I can say.
Well, the film is Running for the Mountains. Babette Hogan and Julie Eisenberg, thanks so much for being my guests on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Alex.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Freddie Hubbard and Jimmy Cliff. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.